back to the show. Well, in hour two of today's show, it's my great pleasure to welcome back to Truth News Radio Kevin Miller, a filmmaker who's done a lot of really original films, and I'll be putting links to a lot of Kevin's work on the show notes of today's show. But today we're going to be talking about his latest film, which is still in progress. And Kevin is actually seeking funding, and there's a website you can go to. He's trying to crowdfund the film, and it's a very, very important project, ladies and gentlemen. This film is a sequel to Generation RX, which came out in 2008, which goes through a whole lot of research and a whole lot of experiences that people have had with psychotropic medicines for the treatment of mental disorders, depression, schizophrenia, and ADHD, just to name a few. And it was a fantastic film, and I actually organised a screening of it in Sydney, and was very, very well received by the people who saw it. Of course, it didn't really hit the mainstream, but I know that Kevin has had a lot of excellent critical review from his work. So I'd just like to welcome back Kevin to the show. Kevin, are you there?
Oh, I sure am. It's great to hear your voice again. It's good to be back on Truth News.
Yeah. Well, it's always been really good talking to you. And, you know, you're one of these guys who does original, genuine work that a lot of people don't know about. I mean, I know you've had some really good reviews and you've been really well received, but it's obviously hard to break in to a major audience, isn't it? I mean, this is a problem I guess everyone has, and sort of a problem that that I have with this show. What's your current sort of feeling about that? Have you managed to really reach out, and do you feel that you've been able to make a difference with your movies?
Well, I think that there's a timing thing involved in most of this, as you well know. And
yeah.
Certainly when Generation RX came out, and I was on the radio with you a number of times, a couple of years, probably three years ago or so, you know, at the time, the film was way ahead of the curve, wasn't it? And while people had been talking about the topic to some degree, no one had really produced a film like Generation RX that rather calmly, if that's the right word, looked at all of the science and then just pointed it out to parents and educators and even lawmakers and you name it, and just said, hey, here's what science says about their, quote, science. So I was way ahead of the curve. As a matter of fact, what happened in the wake of the film was that there was a movement. I don't know if it was pharma funded or not, but there was a movement in universities where they started running all kinds of programs called Generation RX.
How interesting.
And yeah, it really was. And so and that program, of course, is against prescription drug abuse, usually for every other drug mentioned other than psychiatric medications, which is also interesting. But, you know, we were way ahead of the curve. And I remember, you know, doing an interview on National Public Radio in the States directly after the film. And one of the first questions the man asked me was, so how does it feel to know that some people think your film is a fringe film?
Yeah.
And so I looked at him very seriously and I said, well, if people think that telling taxpayers and citizens and moms and dads around the world that there was a 734% increase in the use of Ritalin over the period of 1990 to 1993, then I guess that's fringe. I said, unfortunately, we've shifted our weight, our balance away from caring for the patient, of course, and now it's run by a moneyed agenda that, as you noted, gets all of the coverage, and it leaves guys like you and I just, you know, really, I guess, being forced to be more creative about how we put the word out and whatnot.
Yeah, and just very determined as well. One thing I've noted over the years, for many years, the only prominent, materials that came out questioning the use of pharmaceuticals in the area of mental illness was, of course, Scientology. And, of course, they produced so many movies. They've had a whole lot of movies. And, of course, you know, I don't want to judge Scientologists. I mean, I totally respect people's choices there. But the problem there is that I think that also has created a perception in some people's minds that this is associated with a particular kind of fringe ideology or cult-like religious movement. Have you come up against that at all?
Oh, many, many, many times. As a matter of fact, when Generation RX first came out, I published on my blog and elsewhere a story just telling people that I had been accused of that and would continue to be accused of it, and addressed it and said, well, you know, I mean, I'm not sure if this is better in the eyes of some people, but I was raised a Catholic. You can do with that what you will, too. But yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, for years, the defense of the pharmaceutical companies was that they were able to just say, oh, those people, those Scientologists, you know, or he's a Scientologist, and just brand you with that, with the hope that that broad brush would taint your work. And I think they were less successful in doing so with Generation RX than, you know, than any other film. But as you say, CCHR and Church of Scientology, they're at least the wing of the Church of Scientology, the media wing. They put out films one or two a year.
And
by the way, and for all of the people who are Scientologists who supported, you know, Generation RX or liked it because it was just a factually driven piece, thank you. But I do believe that actually the way that I presented things in Generation RX may have had some influence on some of the ways that they produce their media, because they seem to have backed off the gas pedal a little bit in the context of how the information is presented. It'll never be like a Kevin P. Miller film, but it will, you know, I think that I have possibly even positively influence them in some way, shape, or form.
Absolutely. I mean, I think like the strength of your film is that you let the information itself, which is so powerful, basically drive the film. And with a subject like this, you don't really have to add much to it, because the simple stories, the simple information is so powerful, and it's so it's really undeniable once you just look at it directly, isn't it? And this is what we find with the problem with the media. The problem with the way we get information is it's so packaged, and whether that might be through some agenda towards associating views with a lifestyle or an attitude to the world, or whether it's the propaganda of the pharmaceutical industry, we don't get to really just see the facts.
Well, this is where I think, as I noted a few minutes ago, that I believe that perhaps my upcoming film, which will be released in early 2014, called Letters from Generation RX, I think that the timing is nearly perfect for it, because whether or not anyone would admit it, I do believe that because Generation RX had integrity, that people did listen, even if they didn't like the presentation of it. So, for example, a psychiatrist, I've talked to some very prominent psychiatrists, even people who are involved in the DSM-4, believe it or not, who are reasonable people. And they just said, well, you're just biased. And I said, no, I put on the very first line of the DVD cover that Generation RX tells the rest of the story. You guys had your day in the sun. You've had 20, 25 years worth of controlled media, where basically the news media was really just acting almost like, an entity that publishes press releases. And so I felt that it was important, particularly for parents and educators and you know, legal officials and others, to know that, hey, we need the entire body of information if we're going to put young children on these meds. And so I do think that the timing is better this time around. I think that people, while they may have resented, as I said, the packaging of the information, that it did start a very important conversation not only in North America and Europe and Australia, but throughout the world.
Yeah, I think also there's been a more general discussion of the overprescription of these drugs in the last decade compared to, say, the 90s, which seemed to be a decade where there was just no critical look at it at all. It was just all completely, you know, charge ahead. The amazing, you know, powers of these drugs, Prozac, Ritalin, and it took another decade or so for that descent to actually start to build a little, didn't it? Although your original movie does go back to the original hearings, which I find really interesting, because those original hearings about Prozac actually go back to the early 90s, don't they?
They sure do. You're exactly right. They were 1991 the first Prozac hearings were held before the Food and Drug Administration in Washington. And, I just wrote about that recently again, because I got, 10 questions or so from a very curious teenager who's a young reporter for her newspaper, her high school newspaper. And that was one of the questions she asked me: what lit the fire? And, I heard that stuff, those testimonials, if you will, people standing before their government and pleading with them to listen. And a lot of the characters who were in Generation RX, Thomas Loughran from the FDA, who was the head of their Division of Psychopharmacology, who is now retired, by the way, which is kind of another interesting thing. People believe, and I believe to some degree, that Generation RX all of a sudden shone the spotlight on Thomas Loughran from the FDA, and then he was starting to get a little too much attention in a negative way. And if I may, the odd thing about that, Harewood, is that, years ago, in 1993 to be specific, I produced a film called Let Truth Be the Bias, and it was about alternative medicines and the oppression, if you will, by both conventional medicine and the FDA. And I featured the second in command at FDA at the time, Michael Taylor, who I think you and I have talked about on past programs. Michael Taylor's associated with Monsanto. He was on Monsanto, the legal team that represented them. And he sort of went back and forth in government, back and forth in the FDA. Well, after Let Truth Be the Bias came out, he left FDA. I mean, it was no more than 8-10 months after that, because no one had ever seen an FDA official really on camera, at least for, a couple of decades prior. So you never know. I mean, with your program, with the work that I'm doing, you just never know what corners it reaches.
Yeah.
And that's sad and unfortunate in a lot of ways for hardworking people like you and I, but we really don't know the full breadth of our work is what I'm saying. And I think it touches far more people than perhaps either you or I realize.
Yeah, what I often find is, you don't hear from a lot of people, but you hear from a few people very, very passionately. And that's often a very important sign, because that's an indicator of something much broader that you possibly won't know about. We're just going to break. You're listening to Truth News Radio Australia. I'm talking to Kevin Miller, filmmaker, and we're talking about his latest project, Letters from Generation RX. We'll be right back after this break. You're listening to Truth News Radio Australia, going beyond the spin, deception and propaganda of mainstream news. Visit truthnews.com.au and subscribe now. Welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio, and I'm with my guest Kevin P. Miller today, a filmmaker with a whole lot of work going back decades that he's done on subjects that are really important, subjects that are about finding the truth. And Kevin's major interest has been the overuse and overprescription of psychiatric medications, which he highlighted in the film Generation RX. And there is a new film coming out called Letters from Generation RX, which is currently in progress. Kevin, you were talking there before the break about, you know, some of your earlier work looking into alternative medicines generally. And, of course, this is a very important sort of side to the story, because what we see, as well as this kind of huge wave of propaganda promoting big pharma solutions to medical problems generally, we also have a kind of a war against people's alternative ways of trying to heal themselves. And that cuts across every aspect of health. And but what I've noticed in the last few years is the discussion on that has really picked up as well. And there are a lot more people now, and it's becoming much more politicized than it used to be. You know, a few decades ago, it used to be, well, alternative health was, you know, kind of accepted. It was people did their thing, and the government and the corporations more or less left them alone. But it seemed that what's happened now, as maybe that's kind of seem to be more of a threat by them, but we've started to see much more government interference with people's alternative health choices. We've seen constant changes to the vaccine schedules and attempts to force families by all kinds of pressures, some of them legal, some of them kind of the colour of law, where they try to make people feel that they have to take certain medications or take certain vaccines. With, for example, treatments for cancer and refusal of treatments to cancer is sometimes approached in a kind of medical legal way, especially when it's like the child of a family and they don't want the child to receive these medications. And we've also seen in Australia a really ruthless crackdown on people's attempts to promote alternative cancer cures. And there are some that I dare not even mention on this show, because by even mentioning it, you can have our equivalent of the FDA here, the Therapeutic Goods Administration, come down on you with their lawyers simply for mentioning it. What's your take on all that?
Well, before the break, we were talking about a film that I produced in 1993, Let Truth Be the Bias, and it actually won an international film award. And, you know, prior to that, aside, I just stumbled onto this issue. And I had produced a film before that called The War Within, which was about race relations. And the one before that was on the homeless, particularly homeless vets, called The Promised Land, which, by the way, you can see online for free if you Google it. And you know, so I've been doing this a long time. And when I first crossed over from all of the politically acceptable social issues like homeless, like racism, like some other things, and stumbled into this area of alternative medicines, yeah, I took vitamins and I tried to be healthy, but I didn't really know what the deal was. I mean, I didn't know much about it. So when I first started investigating it, it just seemed to me like it was a civil liberties issue.
Yeah.
And I naively believed that all of my liberal and conservative friends and whatever would just see it in the same way. Well, boy, did I learn very quickly that they didn't agree with that at all, that there was a medical dictum, there was a medical establishment, that there were good, right, wrong kinds of medicine. And I heard it and have been hearing it ever since. As you say, it's particularly ruthless in Australia, but it's certainly not limited to there.
Yeah.
What I see is it happening in Australia and Canada and even, you know, parts even in the UK to some degree and certain parts of Europe, is that you folks are about 10 to 20 years, let's say, behind us in terms of the ruthless nature of government and moneyed interests attacking alternative medicines. And I always say to people, what the hell are you afraid of? I mean, seriously, you could never even pick one vitamin, one mineral, one amino acid, one herb. Well, herbs are a little bit more dangerous, or at least have the potential to be if you're silly about it. But you know, you can't find one that, that has even killed anyone. Not one vitamin has killed a person in the United States in 30 years of the poison control centers testing this. So it's an absurd conversation. It's every bit as absurd as the ne'er-do-wells on Twitter and all throughout the social media world from England who are just obsessed with homeopathy.
Right.
And attacking homeopathy and attacking the prince because the prince is in favor of homeopathy and has used it. And I mean, it's the point where it's the silliest conversation humanly possible. You don't want to use it? Fine. I'm not telling you whether or not to use beta blockers or not.
Yeah, yeah.
And beta blockers kill. So you know, or can kill. Let me rephrase that, okay? So, I mean, it's if you weigh the two against each other, it's just such a preposterous conversation. And so, therefore, you have people saying, oh, well, it's so dangerous and so many people are using it. And I'm saying, yes, that's the point. In the United States, you have the largest laboratory for free, if I dare say the word, libertarian use of vitamins and minerals. We have over 160 million people taking vitamins, herbs, amino acids on a regular basis in the United States. And if it's so darn dangerous,
yeah,
where's all the bodies?
Yeah, it's there are a lot of arguments that are used in that debate. What I find is that two arguments that are used most often by the proponents of what I call medical fascism is on the one hand, they'll say that if you don't, for example, if you're a parent and you don't give your children the prescribed and generally accepted treatments for any particular condition, that you are a neglectful parent. And of course, that can become a very serious charge when it
Absolutely.
Goes to the government, because your kids can be taken away from you. And it's happened. I know it's happened in the US a lot. It's happening in Australia too. Because once that charge is made against you, that you're neglecting your children, it becomes very serious, doesn't it?
Oh, it's deadly serious. And here's the thing. I was actually asked by a woman in Australia,
yeah,
who was a psychiatrist, who was going through this very long, prolonged legal procedure, and they wanted to throw her in jail, and she wanted to introduce Generation RX as evidence. And the interesting thing about when you do produce something with integrity of the information, they don't have a place to attack you. And I would say to all my friends in Australia, of which there are many, that if you hear those nonsensical one-way arguments,
yeah,
the best thing to counter with is, well, Dr. Marcia Engel, who is the former editor of the New England Journal of Medicine, Dr. Irving Kirsch from England and Harvard, and scores of doctors around the world have come out and said that the science behind psychiatric medications, just to choose one area, the science behind those medicines is completely fraudulent. So you have Irving Kirsch, who was on 60 Minutes here in the United States, not Australia, coming out on TV and saying that he did a meta-analysis of all of the studies that have been run through the Food and Drug Administration. He did a meta-analysis of all of them. Came to the conclusion that if anyone was feeling a benefit from any psychotropic medication, that it had nothing to do with the chemical, that it was all placebo. So,
wow.
In other words, we need to stand up to these people and use the vocal, respected critics worldwide who are MDs and some were the head of the DSM and other places. We need to use their facts.
Absolutely.
And
Kevin,
then turn it against them.
We're just going to break. Can I just quickly get the name of that man, that expert you quoted there?
Well, there's two. Dr. Irving Kirsch was one in the UK.
Okay.
There are more.
Okay, well, more after the break. I'm with Kevin P. Miller talking about his work. We'll be right back. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Hi, welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio. My guest today is Kevin P. Miller. We're talking about his work and his newest project, Letters from Generation RX, a film which follows up on Generation RX, which explores a whole lot of issues and problems with modern pharmaceutical psychiatric medicines. Kevin, let's just continue there from where we were at the end of the last break. Now, the experts that you quoted there, one of them was from the UK. Can I just quickly get that name again?
Irving Kirsch. That's K-I-R-S-C-H.
Irving Kirsch. And yes. The other gentleman?
I can't remember who I mentioned in the...
never mind.
Dr. Marcia Engel, who was the former editor of the New England Journal of Medicine. And she came under fire ruthlessly within the last few months because, you know, in Generation RX, of course, and in the new film, Letters from Generation RX, that science journalist Robert Whittaker was featured prominently in the film. And this is a man with unquestionable integrity.
Right.
And Marcia Engel came out on the front page of the New York Times book review section and reviewed his book and another book by Dr. Gary Greenberg, and basically came out and said, she basically verified everything that was said in Generation RX. She backed up Whittaker 1,000%, and then she became just ruthlessly attacked. There's another man who, you know, while we don't agree on everything, I respect immensely, who was, believe it or not, the chairman of the DSM-IV. And I've spoken to this gentleman, emailed back and forth and this, that, and the other. And he watched Generation RX. I didn't try to hide anything from him. I said, take a look at it. Well, he didn't like the way it was presented. He thought some of it was biased and to use his words. I disagreed. And, you know, but what he did is he wrote a book called Saving Normal. And even he, as the former head of the DSM-IV, has been coming out very publicly across national and international media attacking the DSM-5, the new version.
Because how interesting.
He wrote this book, and what he's saying is that we are overdiagnosing too many normal people. So he's trying to, quote, save normal. Now, he also believes that there are people around the world that should be getting these medications that aren't getting them, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But he's a reasonable man. He's a moderate man. And here you have – so one conversation that he and I were having back and forth was like, look, now you know what it feels like? When I came out with Generation RX, you can imagine how I was attacked. I said, you were the head of the pyramid. And now look at how ruthlessly they are attacking you for just trying to, quote, save normal, end quote. So this is some of what needs to be put forth in Australia and elsewhere, and use these highly credible and respected individuals as fodder to tell the government this is not acceptable. It truly is not acceptable. And there is a big change coming. And there's a lot of things in my upcoming film that are going to blow the roof off in terms of certain kinds of cures that have been held back and things that are, you know, very accessible and safe. And there is a change in the wind. I truly, truly believe that.
Wow, that's fantastic. Look, let's start talking about the new film. What is the format of the film? Does it you've said it says here on the page on lettersfromgenerationrx.com that there's interviews with researchers and experts. Is that
absolutely correct? Yes. I mean, in some ways, it followed the same pattern of Generation RX did in the context of in Generation RX. People were astonished because I was able to actually get these very highbrow researchers and academics and medical doctors to sit down and do an interview with me.
Yeah.
Well, it's no different now. For this film, I've been blessed to get people who are going to let's put it this way. People in the medical establishment will be shocked when they see some of the individuals sitting across from me. And
really,
you know, I think that that's the root of something very important, that we are reaching a time when people do want to deal with this emerging problem that they see that has become a huge problem. I mean, you can't slough it off anymore. You can't say that there aren't deaths, that there aren't repercussions for choices. There clearly are. And kids and adults and people all over the world are being harmed. I don't think there's any question about that anymore, no matter how they try to sweep it under the rug.
Well, they've had to change the warnings on some of the leaflets for these medications, haven't they? And the information that they now put on some of the antidepressant drugs was known back decades ago, but it's only in the last few years that they've put that into the advisory notes. Can you speak to that at all?
Well, sure. I mean, a lot of that was covered in Generation RX, as a matter of fact. I mean, of course, when you mentioned the 1991 hearings before the FDA about Prozac, that was the first time when people were publicly coming out and saying this. But, I revealed evidence in my prior film that proves. I mean, it's not conjecture. I don't put conjecture in a film like this. It was proven fact. I got a hold of legal documents, they proved that the FDA was basically helping the drug companies cover up the side effects. As much as anything, they were almost saying, well, how do we deal with this in a public relations sense? So the first part of the conversation wasn't about how can we get the word out to protect people. It was how do we address this if this comes out?
Yeah, sort of PR. How do we handle this from a PR perspective? That's always their approach, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's been admitted, for example, that SSRIs increase suicide risk now. I mean, that's officially admitted, isn't it, for people under a certain age? They've actually acknowledged that?
It's an increased risk, did you say?
Well, yes. This is what I've heard. I don't really follow this in great detail, but I've seen some mainstream acknowledgements that SSRI drugs can actually increase suicide risks, when in fact it's meant to be a treatment for depression, which is a suicide risk. It can actually increase suicide risk.
Well, we're going to go into more of that in Letters from Generation RX, but it very clearly was pointed out in Generation RX that what the studies show. I mean, for example, when you increase the amount of medications among children and teens, well, in 1 year alone, it was something like 1,984. There were almost 2,000 teenagers that committed suicide while on SSRI medications, antidepressants. So, they want it both ways, but they can't have it. Because if you want to say that vitamins and things like that are harmful, well, wait a minute, we're putting all, tens of millions of people on these things, and there is very little, the most minute percentage of downside. But when you increase the psychiatric meds and medications, pharmaceutical medications in general, well, the deaths and this very serious adverse events start spiking, don't they?
They certainly do. And, so many of these massacres that we've seen over the years, including, I believe, the recent one that took place there in Maryland, the perpetrators are on these drugs. But, of course, so many people are on the drugs that could be argued, well, that's just a statistical anomaly because there's that many people on the drugs. But what's your perception of the correlation between mass killings and the use of these drugs?
Well, one thing that, as you know, that we've talked about in past shows is that I always believe that it's the most wise to give information that is proven information.
And,
ever since the days of Columbine, when they sealed the records, we knew that one of the boys, for example, was on a psychotropic medication. The other one we really seriously and strongly suspect he was because he had been going to a psychiatrist for years, et cetera. But they sealed the records after they died. So this has been going on and on and on. And, when the horrible event in Connecticut happened with the murder of those
the kids.
Teachers and school children.
Yeah.
I wrote countless members of the media saying, please, why don't you just ask the question, was the shooter on psychotropic medications? heretofore, that's not something we've heard an answer to.
Indeed, yeah. I mean, at least ask the question.
Indeed.
You're listening to Truth News Radio Australia. I'm with Kevin P. Miller. Stay with us. We'll be here for the rest of the hour. Don't go away. You with Truth News Radio, and I'm talking to Kevin P. Miller, and we're going through his new film. We're also just talking generally about the substantive problem here with psychiatric medications, particularly antidepressants. Well, that's what we've been focusing on. There's a lot more I'd like to talk about, but I'd want to just stay on antidepressants for a bit, because I just want to give you my hypothesis, Kevin, as to why these medications can lead to violence in the way they do. And feel free to jump in and correct me if you think I'm wrong. But what I the way I understand it is that one of the effects of the SSRI drugs is that they work on the frontal cortex, we know that, and they actually can disinhibit. They actually work on the neural pathways which are associated with the inhibitions that we all have, which are in many ways essential to the functioning of civilization. But when those inhibitions are excessive, people can feel very constrained, and that can actually be what people call being depressed, being extremely inhibited, being unable to express oneself, being unable to experience great joy, great feelings of your human potential being able to be expressed. It is perhaps a symptom of depression itself. And the people who've responded well to these drugs have felt that when they take these drugs, they feel better, they feel more free, they feel, I would say, disinhibited. But then one of the problems with being disinhibited is it can also free malignant, aggressive impulses, which are not the sort of things that are in any way conducive to human happiness, to the self-realization, discovery of your potential as a human being, that they are chemical disinhibitions which perhaps open up some aspects of a person's subconscious, feelings that are deeply buried, that suddenly burst out in acts of extreme aggression, sometimes against oneself, sometimes against others. But the problem here is that the chemical approach to it is just so crude and doesn't even touch on the underlying, I guess, concerns that may be psychological or spiritual inside a person. Sorry if that was going a little bit too deep there.
No, I think that's. I mean, I think it's wonderfully stated. And the fact of the matter is, as you alluded to earlier, is that, you know, when you're talking about SSRIs, you're talking about an increased suicide risk. There is no wiggle room.
Yeah.
People can say that the answer, you know, they always have pet answers, and the answer that comes forth is, well, of course, this, they killed themselves. That person was depressed.
Yeah.
And of course, that's why they were on the meds, you dummy. Like, you know, they talk down to you and this kind of a thing. But the fact is Lexapro, Effexor, Cymbalta, which now is being advertised in the U.S. on television for everything from joint pain for old people to a way to quit smoking again.
Incredible.
I thought we got rid of that with Prozac back in the 90s. Wellbutrin, you know, I mean, these are all suicide risks. And I think that, you know, when you point out the symptoms that you're talking about and the effects it has on the brain, it's, you know, the other thing that you hear an awful lot is that it just made me feel nothing. So in other words, somebody could come up and slap you in the face and you would just be, eh, you know, who cares? Or they just don't feel anything. So, like, I ask the question when I give speeches sometimes. Yeah. There's a beautiful little girl named Candace Downing in Generation RX. You may recall her story. And she hung herself. She had been put on an antidepressant for anxiety, of all things. She was having test anxiety.
Yeah.
And she hung herself an hour after sitting on her daddy's lap while watching Animal Planet on TV. So where does a little girl, let's everyone listening, just be honest. Where does a little 11-year-old girl get the idea after watching Animal Planet with daddy, to, you know, and laughing and hugging and whatever, and going in the garage, getting a strong rope, methodically tying a noose that she had never ever done anything like that in her life, putting it over the beam in the garage and hang herself. Now, this story is only as frightening perhaps to some people because it's an 11-year-old girl.
Yeah.
But guess what? When you interview as many people as I have, when you go through the court records from lawsuits throughout the world, you find that it's nearly an identical story that is told over and over and over again about how these people kill themselves and why.
There's something almost robotic about it as well, isn't there? I often heard that word used when these
yes.
people, it's like they're not human anymore. They're acting out in some kind of weird mechanical way. And yet what they're doing is horrific. It's really hard to understand it.
Well, let me tell you, in the new film, there are some, you know, this is a different kind of a journey in this film because we are going from darkness, if you will, to light. I mean, there's still tragic stories in my film, but there's stories of a lot of people and how they became well after, you know, this crashing into this brick wall called antidepressant use.
Sure.
But there was a man named, I won't give his name right now, but he's from Canada, whom I interviewed. And he is the most loving father. I interviewed his daughter, and we spoke for hours. And, you know, he had a son, and his son was a BMX biker. And like a dutiful dad, I've done the same thing with my kids in different sports and whatever. Like a dutiful dad,
yeah.
He would drive with his son all over Canada, and they'd go to these events, and they'd have a blast together. And his son would compete in these. He was a 13-year-old boy, maybe not even quite that old. And in the middle of the night, one night in a remote Holiday Inn somewhere, he choked his son to death.
Oh, my God.
And, you know, I know this is hard for people to hear, but he was on Paxil. And they proved him insane, and they were calling it what in the U.S. is called temporary insanity, except that what happened in Canada that has never happened in the U.S. and maybe Australia is that they said in Canada that the temporary insanity was induced by the medication he was on.
Wow, that's
now,
a landmark, isn't
that
it?
That is a blockbuster.
Absolutely.
And there's an identical case here in the United States where a man he killed his beautiful daughter. Same thing, dutiful father, blah, blah, blah. He's now in prison in North Carolina for life. And it's the exact same drug, the exact same reaction, the exact same tragedy. And, but this is how differently things are being interpreted from one North American nation to their southern neighbor. It's an absolute travesty.
Yeah, because obviously the powers that be can't allow a finding like that to come through the courts because it would just open an avalanche. And the pharmaceutical industry doesn't – they're making too much money out of this. I mean, it just comes down to money, doesn't it? I mean, they can't let their profits –
Well, I think so, but you know what I always say, Harewood? I really do. I say it like this. It's again, you know – I want people to have medical freedom of choice. So I am not on a mission to remove, unlike, you know, obviously the Scientologists and others, I am not on a mission to eliminate these drugs from the face of the earth. But where a film like Generation RX and my new film, Letters from Generation RX, come in is that you arm people with the information. And I have dear friends who are on antidepressants. And all we ever talk about is like, look, now that you've seen the film, now that you know I've been researching this for, you know, well over a decade now, perhaps if someone was armed with the information that they could start getting crazy, suicidal, or violent thoughts, perhaps something will connect with them in their disassociative state. And they will say to themselves, oh, that's right. I heard that before. That's where these strange, violent thoughts are coming from. And they'll make the association and either find someone to get help or do something to change the course.
Very, very interesting point. And one thing to note is that with a frontal lobe brain damage, which some researchers have said that that is actually what these drugs induce, is a form of frontal lobe brain damage, people's self-awareness is actually reduced. So one of the problems is your ability to be self-reflective is also reduced along with everything else. So that type of self-awareness might even be impossible or very, very difficult when you're on the drug. Kevin, we're almost out of time. Just a quick plug for your funding site and anything you'd like to say just about the new film.
Well, I don't have the exact URL in front of me, but the website is called Indiegogo. That's Indiegogo, Indiegogo.com. And if you go there, just please search for Letters from Generation RX. And you could also obviously search Google in the same fashion. Always put, you know, Kevin P. Miller in the search, and I'm sure it will come up. And we're excited about the campaign. It just started, and we've got another 43, 44 days or what have you to raise the money we need to finish the editing on the film. And once we're done, I'd like to be back with you, and I think you're going to see a very, very, very powerful statement on the role that these drugs are playing in people's lives today. And so I think that's probably a good way to end it for me.
Great. Thanks, Kevin. Yeah, I'd like to have you on again, not too far away from now. I'd like to have you on again to go through some of the other issues we didn't touch on today.
But, it'd be my great pleasure. Thank
you. It would be great. Kevin, yeah, it's been really great talking to you today. I feel like we've managed to make a little bit of a difference.
Sure.
Absolutely. Well, that's the show from Truth News Radio. We'll be back next week. We'll see you then.